If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Welcome to Cafe with Monica. This is episode 18. I'm Monica, your host, a millennial helping millennials to hashtag just talk about it over coffee. In this episode, we're just going to talk about bipolar disorder. So I can't wait for you to listen to the rest of the episode. Okay, guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited because I have Erez, who is the creator and the host of the Check Check podcast, which is dedicated to normalizing conversations around how we think, feel, and behave. In his podcast, you'll hear the real and raw conversations he has with his guests, which are from all around the world. And his motto is, let's check ourselves before we wreck ourselves, which I love. So let's welcome Erez to the podcast.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Just dropped coffee all over myself, but you know what? It's a Saturday. It's fine.
You know, everything from there can just go up, right?
Right.
Because now, like, it's like your lap or your clothes, they're caffeinated now. So it's like it's in you and all around you.
Yep. So I'm just going to be super productive. But thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I love listening to your podcast. It's so real. There's not a lot of podcasts out there that, you know, really just have genuine conversations and really don't filter. Like, I feel like a lot of podcasts filter themselves.
Yeah.
And I think one of your podcasts really shows kind of like the real emotion that you have with your guests and the real, like, your own opinion. Like, you're not afraid to be wrong.
And you're not. No. I'm okay. Well, I mean, I'm kind of okay with being wrong, because I think when it comes down, like, I wanted to do a podcast that were about people's real, like, lived experiences, mm-hmm. but also make them very discussion based, mm-hmm. so that it was like, let me show you how these conversations about these darker things or these deeper things can go, and it doesn't have to be just like. I just wanted to be able to show, like, live by example, how these conversations can be, and that while they're serious and while they like document dark times for people or things that they're dealing with, that they can actually be lighter, and then they can become these conversations and this sharing of knowledge and create space for people. And so I think if we're creating space within ourselves, we help show other people how they can create space for themselves as well.
Right. Yeah, I 100% agree that. And that's why I wanted to create this podcast, because I felt like when I was going into conversations with people just in real life, it was so hard to bring up hard topics because people didn't want to talk about things like this. People wanted to have, you know, the superficial conversations. And I never felt like we were ever creating a deep relationship or, you know, really getting to know the person at a vulnerable and deeper level. When you mentioned that you with your guest, you do talk about some of their darkest times. Can you relate to that? Can you relate to experiencing your own dark times? And specifically, you know, what kind of grew your passion to start the podcast?
Great question. like the Check Check actually started off on YouTube. Oh. And so I was starting to do, it was about almost 3 years ago. And kind of what led me to that was about 2 months before I started it, I was hospitalized for a suicide attempt. And it, you know, afterwards, there was a lot, I live with bipolar disorder, and I was, like, diagnosed, like, close to, it was right before my 21st birthday, so about 18 years ago. And so I've lived with it for quite a while. And after the suicide attempt, people's automatic assumption was that it was because, like, I was having an episode or, you know, my medication was off or all these things that were related directly to the bipolar. And, In therapy, I was realizing that it wasn't coming from an episodic place, that I was actually going through a situational depression where I was questioning my own life and I was in that kind of pain. And that came from also an understanding of what my bipolar looks like. And so it actually bugged me that people were kind of saying, oh, you did this because of the bipolar. When I was kind of in a place where I was like, no, I'm actually owning where I was when I did that. And those were my choices. It's not something you necessarily want to own. But at that point, I was kind of in this place where I was like, I actually do want to own this action that I took when I was in extreme pain. And kind of assigning it to the bipolar became very, it became very superficial to me in a sense, because it kind of wrote it off. Oh, well, he was sick, right? And so you're not looking at what the deeper things behind it necessarily. And so afterwards, as I was kind of discovering that, like, besides taking care of my mental illness, there were other parts of my mental health that I was ignoring for all those years that needed to be addressed and that weren't being addressed. And combining that with the fact that people automatically assumed it was the bipolar, I kind of connected that with stigma because, sometimes with a disorder, other people or we ourselves can automatically just create this identity around it. And when we do that, we kind of write off our own choices and everything else that kind of embodies us. So it really became the videos were about addressing the stigma, but also kind of the self-stigmatization that happens throughout the process of having a diagnosis. And I wanted to address that. And I actually remember someone being like, oh, well, name it something like, bipolar this or bipolar that. And I was like, I don't know, like, what if I want to talk about something else? And I know myself. And when I label something very specifically, I'm going to be like so immersed in that, that if I try to go outside of that, I'm going to be like, no. It's like wearing an outfit and the colors aren't matching. Yeah. Like, I would be bugged by it. So I was like, no, I want something more general. And that's kind of how I came up with the Sheck Check, because it was kind of playing on, the idea of like self-checking ourselves. Because if we're checking ourselves, then we're helping, like, it helps other people understand things better. And so it was geared toward the stigma, but then I'm glad I kind of took that general view with things, mm-hmm. because I then started addressing things with our mental health, which, everybody lives with. Everybody has mental health. It's the way we think, feel, and behave. I'm almost positive that everybody thinks, feels, and behaves, and it all gets affected every day. And being affected does not necessarily mean a condition or an illness. And so we have to be willing to talk about these things, like emotional awareness. And so that's kind of where the videos went to. I was talking about, like, things like forgiveness and healing and gratitude and sorrow and all these kind of different parts of the ways that we think and feel and behave, to kind of start those conversations going. And then I realized that I wanted to actually have those conversations with people, which is when I started the podcast, like almost, I guess, a year ago. And now it's just like, I do like solo episodes here and there where I address like tiny issues, like our judgments of ourselves or others and dealing with insecurities and all those things that kind of affect our mental health. And then, obviously a big portion of that is having guests on and having those conversations that we're not having and connect on those deeper levels. As you were saying, there's a lot of superficialness out there. And I think a lot of it is because we're not comfortable within it with ourselves. And then we're also taught to not be comfortable with it in society. So we kind of breed these very like surface level relationships or surface level conversations. And we're capable of so much more. We just have to build those bridges. And I think these kind of conversations build those bridges, and that's where we meet on.
Oh yeah, I 100% agree on that, because so like I'll go out in like in a social setting, right, where we're at a party or something, and then people ask, I think the typical question that people ask is, what do you do, right?
Don't even get me started on that, because that goes into like a whole thing of identity, where it's like we're identified by what we do or who we're married to or what relationship we're in or all these things. And we don't go, Yeah, don't get me started on that one.
But yeah, so it was like so like I was saying, is the whole having a party and people asking what you do, and I say a therapist, and there's so much stigma behind being a therapist, and they're like, okay, I can't talk to her because she's about to psychoanalyze me, she's about to look deep into my soul and tell me that I have all these issues. And so for me, it was that hard for me to be out and have conversations that were meaningful, like I said. And so when I hear things like your podcast and I hear you talk so openly about owning the diagnosis, and even then, when I first tell my clients their diagnosis, and this is maybe something they went to a psychologist, they had a psychological evaluation, and because they come not knowing what's going on. They're like, Monica, I have no idea what's going on, but there's something. I'm living life and I just don't understand what's going on, and I just want to fix it. There's this mentality of fixing who we are, and it's like instead of embracing who we are, instead of figuring out what works for us. And so when we get the diagnosis, and I'll speak specifically on bipolar disorder, and people get that diagnosis, it's so stigmatized because we use it. We don't even realize when we use it in everyday conversation about like, oh, she's so bipolar, and it's so insensitive, when we say things like that. But that's how we were brought up. We were brought up that, that's how you have conversations about that topic. Or oh no, they're mu like you mentioned how when you were having suicidal ideations and you acted, and people were saying, oh, it's because he's bipolar, it's because he had that diagnosis, even though there was probably something deeply rooted that was not being addressed, like you mentioned. And I think like people don't understand that it's so more complex than that. It's not just having a diagnosis and then that's it. That explains everything. It explains one part of the person.
I completely agree, and like it's I think we like boxes, right? We like understandable boxes, and this is like with everything in life, I think. But obviously, like in regards to even a diagnosis, I saw how like I kind of took on the diagnosis as an identity almost, right? I even like actually after the attempt, I actually stopped saying I am bipolar. I would just say I live with bipolar because I think even the words that we use around it, they're strong and they not only speak to other people, but they also speak to us. And so it became this very like identifying piece of myself. And it's really kind of nuts how it can kind of take over your thinking and how your whole life kind of becomes of it because you're trying to stick to these boxes that are understandable in a sense, even if they're not necessarily understandable to you at the time. And that's kind of how we go through life. We have to understand. So we even do this with like, what is it, Myers-Briggs personality types. We're like, oh, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a that. And then we stick to that. And how much does that actually potentially limit us? Because we're like, no, I'm an introvert and that's all I will ever be. Well, I mean, you have introvert traits. It doesn't necessarily mean that's all you'll ever be and that is your whole personality. Perhaps in this situation, you're more extroverted or whatever. So we actually can get stuck in those boxes that we're clinging to that are, understandable, I guess.
Yeah, I think people don't understand that, with those personality tests, and let's just say two people are categorized as having the same type of personality, right? Because I think that's what it says, like checking the boxes. You have these two, they're gonna manifest differently in different situations, and it's on a spectrum. So when you're introverted, when you're extroverted, it's on a spectrum, And I don't think that people necessarily realize that. They like to know definite answers, and that's always hard when I talk to clients and they're like, well, tell me, what does this mean? And I tell them, we're gonna have to explore that a little more, because I can tell you what the DSM-5, the diagnostical manual, says what bipolar is, and these, how I'm supposed to diagnose you, but I can't really tell you how that looks to you, because there are several things that can trigger you and that can cause you to feel a certain way that not necessarily is going to look like to another person,
I can well, like I agree with like all of that because like I think number one, the spectrum thing in general, like I think there's a lot of like clinging to polarities in general, but obviously we assume we kind of make that connection with bipolar because it has the word polar in it. But there is actually a spectrum that exists in bipolar. And in general in life, like, you know, we have those polarities, but there's a lot more space in the spectrum to kind of ride that wave. But, you know, when it comes to, like, you know, I do believe in, like, the diagnosis, right? I do believe everything it says in the DSM about everything, to my knowledge, right? That's all I can know, whatever's to my knowledge at the moment. But I think it is important to remember our individuality within all that. Like, we want those simple answers. We want to have those, you know, we don't want to explore. We just want an answer, and what do I do with it? And that's it. That's all I want, right? But at the same time, I'm almost positive every single person in this world has a different brain from the other person. I'm almost positive of this. I haven't totally fact-checked it because that would take a lot of time, but everybody has a different brain. And then, you know, bipolar disorder is a chemical imbalance. So no two imbalances can be the same. So it became extremely important for me to understand what my bipolar look like, because if I'm assuming it looks like everybody else's and everybody else has the same answers of how to live with it than me, or, you know, what it looks like to them, then I'm actually also denying my individuality. And that's an extremely important thing with everybody, and when you're dealing with your mental health, is that you are an individual. And that is actually one of the things that, you know, was a tip off for me that the attempt was not the bipolar. It's because I had spent years understanding what my bipolar looked like. I actually had a therapist tell me when I used to live in Chicago, and my therapist in Chicago, he said, "I want you to sit down and I want you to write what your mania looks like from your perspective, what your hypomania looks like from your perspective, what your depression looks like from your perspective, and what your onsets look like from your perspective, and what, like, the times in between look like to you." And so sitting there writing it down, although it's not easy, you want to do it after you potentially have an episode, like, not during, because I think that would be a little difficult. But you know, to look back and look what those look like, that's why I was able to look back at that time before the attempt and be like, no, this wasn't like a hypomanic state. This wasn't a typical, you know, bipolar depression state. This was very different. And it's because of that, you know, made me understand that better. But I think in general, we have to understand that we're still individuals, and whatever we're dealing with, we have to be dealing with what it looks like to us and not what it looks like in a general sense, or take on other people's understandings of it, because we can lose sight of our own healing and recovery when we're doing that.
Oh yeah, and I love that your therapist had that, you know, that whole, I don't know what you call it, like homework or you know that exercise to build self-awareness on the diagnosis, you know, and how that looked like for you, okay? But I want to go back for a little bit on when you initially got the diagnosis, because I know self-awareness, it had to come with time. It wasn't like, oh, I know myself. I know how I, you know.
It's like I'm there. I was like, oh, I'm diagnosed. I got it. I know what my hypomania looks like. I know it. No, 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 no,
Yeah.
no,
So
no.
how
It's a
did that look?
process.
Yeah. So how did that look like in the beginning when you were first diagnosed? What was your reaction? How did that make you feel? You know,
So,
like that's a lot.
let's go back 20 years. No, well, it really is though. No, I was a junior in college and I was failing out, and that's it. No, and basically, like, my parents were like, okay, let's, you know, we need to, something's not right. Maybe it's a learning disability of some sort. We want to get you tested. Now, also keep in mind that, like, I had spent a lot of, like, high school in therapy because I was dealing with anxiety or depression. Now we're kind of like, oh, it was undiagnosed bipolar, or the beginnings of it, basically. And so, you know, my parents took me for, like, to a psychologist, and I basically went through 3 days of testing, with the psychologist. And it was like about a month later, and the psychologist was in California. I was in college in Pennsylvania. So it was all done, like, on a conference call. And I remember, like, I was by myself, but my friends were like in the other room. And the doctor, said, okay, so it's a bipolar 2 diagnosis. And I think you've been self-medicating with cannabis. And which I just looked at it as I was smoking it. I didn't think of it as self-medicating at the time. And he was like, and I remember being like very, I use a lot of humor with everything in general. And so it was kind of like this, especially when something serious hits me. I was like, okay, like it was shock, obviously. I had understanding of depression and anxiety. Bipolar was like, oh, snap. What? Like what? Like I understood that it was mania and there was two polarities and not sleeping and hypersexuality. I knew all those little bits, right? I knew the general sense of the diagnosis. And literally after I got off the phone call, he had said, like, because you're self-medicating, we want to take you to we think you should go to like a wilderness program.
Wilderness program?
Yeah, a wilderness program for like 90 days where they put you out into the wilderness with people, but then you have to like then they send you off and you have to find your way back. But it was also like a detox from
Okay.
cannabis, which we'll not get into that. But I literally walk out of my room and needing to have that humor. My friends are like, so? And I'm like, they want to put me in a camp. It's called Getting Things Straight. And I was making like a joke because I'm gay. And like, I was like, yeah, it's conversion camp. And like, because that's where like, I have to make an inappropriate joke because that's how I do it. And then I told them, and then there was like moments of like crying and confusion. And Since I was failing out, I left college, moved in with my parents, and the doctor that I had seen there in Chicago, I didn't go to the wilderness program. I was like, I'm good. Can we just do this
No,
here?
thanks.
And the doctor actually, like that initial doctor that I went to, ignored the diagnosis. And he put me on antidepressants. And if anybody knows that, like, I don't know if anybody out there who's listening knows, but if you're putting someone with bipolar disorder typically on just an antidepressant, it actually is going to induce mania, essentially. So he put me on an antidepressant and he also put me on like Ambien. And so what that led to was like a dependence on Ambien because the Ambien would let me sleep
Sleep.
when I couldn't sleep. And then that kind of rolled into eventually going to rehab for that. But it was scary and it was confusing. And I think I was honestly accepting it on a superficial level. Like I was like, yeah, this is th I have bipolar. Like I wasn't necessarily afraid to say it, but I wasn't necessarily ready to look inside of myself and understand it better. It was like, putting on a shield, and the shield was actually like be like, I'm owning myself, I'm owning myself, but there's a lot more deeper work that has to come from it. And that happened over, like you said, it happened over like a period of years. It's not like snap, boom, 2 months later, you're good. I think acceptance on any level is a process, and you're going to hit different levels. But yeah.
And during that time, like, did you try different medication? Did you wean off some, got a new ones, like, because that's what I typically see with clients. We talk about what medications have been on, that they're on, and we talk about what kind of changes they've had and how long they've been on this, if they've actually kind of process the medication to where it's working and not just like, because I've had clients where they've never taken medication and they finally take it for 30 days and they're like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this, Monica. This doesn't, no, it doesn't make me feel
Yeah.
right. And it's like, okay, we got it. Just a couple of months, a lot more months, so we can
It's
see if it's working or not.
a tough process. I think there's actually a musical called Next to Normal, and it actually talks about a woman who has bipolar disorder in it. And she literally, there's a scene with her, her psychiatrist. And she goes, it's n like he goes, it's not an exact science because it's not. You're dealing with the chemicals of your brain and you're also dealing with the rest of your body as well. And so for me, I mean, I've been on a lot of medication throughout the years. It's like, yeah, 18 years now. And so I think one of the first things I had to accept was, number one, it takes time. It takes time for your body to get used to it. It also takes time to learn what you should be and what you can't be doing on it. And it is a lifestyle change for some of us, for a lot of us, because it's, I mean, it's medication. And so there are other things that get affected. And also because you're dealing with your emotions and acceptance of the disorder and whatever is going on, its job is actually to shift your moods and to shift things. So in that shifting, like, there's going to be discomfort. There's going to be things. There's going to be moments of like, wow, greatness. And there's going to be moments of like, oh, because your body is getting used to something that is entering it. And so it's patience. Something that I got into the habit of early on was keeping a journal, keeping a med journal. And so, you know, documenting what moods I was going through throughout the day when I was trying a new medication. And it was typically at the start of a new medication that I would do that. And it's hard though, because I see in those moments how you do just want to stop taking them, or you're not used to this new version of you, you know, on medication, whatever that might mean. And you're like, oh, I miss that old version of me, or I miss that. And so you go off the meds. And I actually never did that, because I grew up in a family where my dad was a chemist and my dad worked in research and development for pharmaceuticals. So I understood like the repercussions of going on and off medications could be. And so I knew how, you know, it might feel good for a moment. It might feel good for a few days, but also going on and off those medications, it does a number to your body long term as well. So it's important to just, I think, as hard as it can be, like, note what you're feeling, note what's happening, note the physical and note the emotional, because that's the things that you tell your doctor, your therapist, and that they can be aware of and watch for as well.
Yeah, oh, I love that. Thank you for explaining all that. I love that, because, I mean, coming as a therapist and kind of explaining it to people, sometimes people just want to hear it from their peers. People want to hear from people who are actually going through it, you know, even though it might not look like how theirs manifest. It's still something to, it feels good to know that I'm not alone in this and that other people are going through this. And other people have said, hey, it took 18 years. Hey, you know, it was a process, you know, and it's something that it's everyday living with bipolar. It's not, I'm bipolar. It's living with it every day.
It's because it's like, it's weird because it's a part of you. Mm-hmm. But the minute we make it, like the minute I made it all of me is when I was losing myself to it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't losing myself to the mania or the depression or anything. It was losing myself to the identity that I had let kind of create. You know, I hear a lot of people talk about how, you know, oh, the doctor labeled me. And yeah, and it is a doctor labeling what they're observing of you. They're not labeling you. And I, you know, this becomes a difficult conversation with people sometimes for me, because I did that, and I would blame the doctor and I would blame all these different people along the way. But the way I look at it is, whatever, you know, if we're viewing something as a label of ourselves, like if I view the doctor as labeling me, then that's because I'm viewing myself as labeled. It's not because the doctor labeled me. And so I had to look at how I had kind of taken that on and labeled myself. Mm-hmm. And so it's important to note that a diagnosis is not a label of a human being. The diagnosis is a label of a list of symptoms that you are presenting with. Mm-hmm. And so we can't, one of my big things is I don't want people to lose themselves to that like I did, because I did it. So like I was manipulatively doing it with myself. Like I didn't even realize I was doing it with myself. And it kind of led to me ignoring all those other things. So we do have to check ourselves with it. And I hope, because I'm talking about it from a place of experience, that, you know, it might reach more people because of that. Or it might reach people in a different way, not more people.
Yeah. I always have to catch myself when I say, oh, are a lot of people coming to this? And it's like, no, I just want people to come to this, not a lot. Because I'm very like, I'm an achiever. I don't know if you know what the Enneagram is. Do you know what the Enneagram is?
I do. My friend was trying to talk me into like looking at more, and I'm like, no, because I don't want, I'll get stuck looking, I'll be like so invested in it. I know myself. I know, like, I'll just get like so like in it.
Yeah, so I just recently took the Enneagram test, and I'm a number three, wing two, which is like being an achiever, but also being a helper. And I'm somebody who is very production driven, achievement driven. It's always been something in my life, and I have to catch myself because there's an healthy part of who I am, and then there's the unhealthy part of that as well.
Yeah, like where it can take you.
So I wanted to talk to you about so. What are some misconceptions about bipolar that people may not know, or maybe the things that you've experienced that you've had to educate other people in your life that you're like, no, that's not it, you know?
Yeah, I think, well, one thing and I think I said earlier is that, like, there's so much more to a person than just their mental illness. And so it's important to look at that. I think one of the things that, again, I faced within myself, but I also faced it with other people, is other people's assumption that, you look at looking at the DSM and the diagnosis and taking that as
The end all be all.
the end all be all. And it's like, when we do that, we're forgetting people as individuals, and it's important that we look at an individual, not a diagnosis. And so the diagnosis plays into that person, but it's not all of that person. So they still have their own personality traits, and they, again, like we were talking before, they all still have their version of mania and hypomania, and of course, certainly connecting pieces, obviously. But it's important to understand the person and how it interacts with them versus, like, it's important to understand the diagnosis, but it's important to understand beyond that diagnosis the person. I think it's also misconceptions. It's a mood disorder, not a. I think I often will see people talk about how, like I heard, I think someone say something about bipolar anger. And I was like, that's not a thing. But there's like articles written by people talking about it, like not medical professionals, but like, just, and I'm like, no, like, okay, so it's a mood disorder, not a feeling disorder. And so the mood is the overall, like the umbrella almost, right? And the feelings, it's actually important to understand the feelings themselves and how they connect, obviously, but let's not confuse the two, I guess. And so I think, by talking about it with people, that's how we kind of educate. I actually shudder when people actually use like, oh, he's bipolar. Because for me, that's a personal connection though, because like, I look at how the identification with it can, I guess, mess with ourselves, but also when we're doing that, it's allowing other people to do that.
I came from a different background in therapy, and we were taught person first language because I work with a variety of people with different disabilities and mental health issues, both physical, mental, and for us it was very important that we first mention the name of the person and then disability or diagnosis second, because it's like we don't want we this doesn't define you. This isn't who you are. You're not bipolar, Sally or whatever. No, you're Sally who, has bipolar or, or is going through or living with, And it's important that we put the first person first.
I completely agree with that, because I think there's this like kind of unspoken glory when you're like, this is like me being proud, right? Like, I'm bipolar. That's like a proud moment. I don't view myself using, hey, I'm Aries, I live with bipolar. I actually view that as more empowering. And again, I think like the way that we're looking at it ourselves, and the way we're speaking about it is actually what is allowing other people to do the same thing. So if I am making, like jokes about bipolar and it's around somebody who is not in the know, it's giving them permission to do that as well. So they feel like it's okay, and that's the appropriate way to talk about it. So for me, like the language about it in general, it goes back to my idea of living by example. I have to walk the walk the talk of the talk that I'm walking. And so if I want to, I have to be doing those things as well. But, I think there's a lot of misuse of the word as well. Like you had made the slang terminology of it, like, oh my God, she's being so bipolar. Or, it's like the weather is so bipolar. I'm like, no, like the weather actually also exists on a spectrum, just like bipolar disorder. It's not like, I mean, it's not, you're not even using it intellectually right now. Like you're not even you don't have knowledge of the weather even right now. So it's like, let's make a connection here. And I think, understanding that it's not just these polar opposites that exist. It's actually why I prefer manic depression sometimes over bipolar, because bipolar actually separates it a lot more, and there's a lot more gray area and mixture that happens than just like, oh, he's going through a depression, or he's manic, and that's it. I think that makes a difference. But because, also at the end of the day, understanding that, people can be depressed without having depression, and that depressed is a feeling, and depression is a period of time of that feeling. And then when you add it to, something like bipolar disorder, it goes a lot deeper, obviously. So I think it's like I think it's the misunderstandings of what, depression is and mania is as well, separated and then obviously together with bipolar.
I 100%. I wanted to ask you about so you've seen obviously different helping professionals within the years. Was there ever a mistrust of treatment professionals, of mental health counselors or psychologists? Was there ever a mistrust? Because I've seen that a lot with some of my clients. Like they come in already scarred by other professionals who may have not, they might not have been the right fit for them, and so, but they stayed with them for a long time, unknowingly accepting. It's kind of like I made this an example in another podcast about, so if you go and get a haircut and that person keeps fucking up your hair every time and you continue going there and they don't and they still mess up your haircut, like how do you rationalize that, you know?
It's a really good comparison. I've been there, not recently, but because I'm bald, but I've been there. I have had a lot of therapists and a lot of different kind of therapists with different modalities, I guess, throughout the years, and psychiatrists as well, because I've moved around. There is kind of a mistrust that can form very easily, and it's also difficult because you want help so bad that sometimes you do get stuck with people, and you're not realizing you're stuck, and you're not realizing you're not getting the help that you may necessarily need or that you're responding to well. And that's why, like, I think also, like, having had a lot of different, mental health professionals, you also figure out what is right for you as well. And also understanding that, like, you might outgrow a therapist or somebody, and it's not a big deal. You just might be in a different place, and it's just not right. It's just not fitting anymore, and it's okay for it not to fit. It's not okay for you to stop receiving treatment, though. Like, I'm just gonna say that. Well, everyone, to each his own. But I've had, I had a lot of therapists that I stayed with a long time. Like one, I came up with kind of names for them, where it was like, not like hurtful names, but it was like, oh, this was the coffee talk therapist. Like we just talked about my week, and we didn't go deeper in. We just, like, it was almost like, my insurance was paying me to sit and chill with someone. Which it's those, I mean, those sessions are nice. They're like, they could be like very relaxing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if
But
you're
you need to.
somebody, yeah, I mean, if you're somebody who doesn't have any support, that type of therapy, you know, anybody who you talk to, that could be, you know, someone that you would, you know, kind of gear towards treatment, but sometimes you need more. You need more meat.
And if, like, I found that, like, I needed a therapist who would challenge me, who would not kind of just be like, like, nicely, not like be like, not be like full on, drill sergeant. It's like, feel now, what are you feeling? Not like that. But well, I mean, maybe on occasion that would be
It
nice.
just depends on what you need at the time.
Exactly. What you need at the time, and It can change as well throughout time, I guess, or within the session. So, like, I think, and I've definitely had psychiatrists where I've lost trust in because of certain things, which is actually like how I moved from Chicago to California. I had a issue with a psychiatrist there, and medication stuff. And but I also understood the need for me to receive treatment and the importance of it. And even recently now, within the last few years, I left the therapist I was with before my attempt. He was my psychiatrist and my therapist, and I stayed with him afterwards because I built like 7 years with him, and there was trust. And over time, I was, as I was dealing with all these other things that were like beyond the bipolar, I guess, I was realizing I wasn't getting what I needed. And I would say, I need tools. I need tools to deal with the anxiety. And we were like exploring, traumatic experiences and dealing with my core beliefs and my mistaken beliefs of myself and of everything and kind of challenging those. And his method was to just talk about it and delve deep and deep. And I think that's an important thing and a great thing to do because we need that understanding. But I also realized I wasn't getting anything to deal with the repercussions of it, and it wasn't moving me forward in the way that I wanted to. And so I was like, okay, it's time to move forward. And I found a new therapist who is doing those things and who's giving me those tools. And and it's been so freeing and so incredible to have that kind of focus shift and to be able to be, I guess I don't like to say rebuilding myself because I don't like to view myself as like broken down. I'm continually building myself into whomever I'm becoming. And so it's important to just keep going with it. If something is not working out for you, it doesn't mean that they're not all going to work out for you. If you've had a bad experience, it's so important to not, group them, like group mental health professionals as like, it's always going to be a bad experience. Because if you look at it, the stigma that we're complaining about, that we're receiving, making those generalized judgments of everything, it's number one affecting your health, but it's also stigmatizing them. And so the very thing we're fighting with against ourselves, we're actually projecting onto somebody else. So it's important to just keep on trying and, challenge whatever those beliefs are.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you said about how some people just think that there's some therapists are just gonna want to talk up your about your past, 'cause and I can get I mean this is another podcast for another day about coaching and counseling and because I feel like we do similar things that work together. And we still keep you accountable. We do dive deep into the issues when needed. But for me as a therapist, I'm gonna be where you're at. I want to meet you where you're at. I can't, if you're not, if you've moved past that, if you've had previous therapists who have touched on, your past and your trauma and how that's affected you now, I want to figure out, okay, what is sitting with you right now, and what are some obstacles that you need and tools that you need in your toolbox to move you forward? Because I know how it feels, especially somebody who, for me, anxiety is a big thing for me, because I am a perfectionist, I am an achiever, and I know that some of those negative beliefs that I kind of grew up to believe, because these were things from my childhood that I grew up to believe. I had to rewire, I don't want to say rewire my brain, but relearn and teach myself that no, Monica, that is not right. That is not true. And when my current therapist, that she is, because I feel like therapists need therapy too.
Oh God, yeah. No offense. No, because like I think about it, you guys are dealing with so much energy all day from other people, emotional energy and what they're going through. Like to not, for a therapist to not be going to therapy, to or any self-care thing, I'm like, no, like I would like to, I've asked my therapist before, I'm like, please tell me you're in therapy. Because like I'm a lot. I'm a lot. And I know I'm not supposed to hear the patient before me yelling, but I did. And so they're a lot too. And so please tell me you're taking care of yourself. Like, no, I think it's necessary.
It's super necessary to make sure that you're okay and you're working on your own things, and because there's new triggers. I mean, I've had clients come in and it's like triggered me and I'm like, oh, I need to do a therapy session. And it's not the client's fault in any way. Or, you know, you mentioned like sometimes you could be too much. I never want to say that to a client, like you're too much. No, but more of like,
imagine? Wow. That would suck if a therapist said that to me.
Yeah, no. But I understand it's like you're going through a lot and sometimes there is something called compassion fatigue where if you're just letting it all be on you, because we do go into therapy and in sessions wanting the best outcome for our clients, wanting them to feel so much better than they came in. Right. But I'm glad that you touched on making sure that you try different therapists, making sure if it's not working, that you move on, you know, and it's okay because for me, it's, I'm trying to get myself out of a job. That's my job to get myself out of a job. Because if you're doing okay, that's fine. I'm not gonna say, oh no, he's not gonna go to therapy with me anymore. Yeah. No, it's like, he's gonna move on to whoever, you know, whoever he needs to work with him. Right. And sometimes you even can have an open conversation about your therapist, like, who do you recommend? You know, and we recommend people that we think are going to be best for you because now we know you at a certain level, you know, we've built a relationship. But sometimes what I've seen is when clients have been in, with therapists for several years, it sometimes ends up there's a point where it becomes where we're just kind of friends and it's like we're not being productive or doing anything and it's like, okay, that's not, I'm not, you know, it's a therapeutic relationship and I want you to be able to keep growing and keep you know, like
the point is to grow. The point literally is, I mean, we talk about healing, right, and all those things and finding, you know, ways to like manage ourselves and manage whatever we're dealing with, right? But like I view all of those things as growing. So the goal is always to grow. And so when we grow, like we grow out of clothes, we grow out of like shoes, we grow out of like a lot of things, I guess. I don't know. Like I couldn't think of any more like examples.
That's it.
But we grow. So that also includes like obviously therapists. We might outgrow or we might be ready to move forward. And that's a scary thing as well to think about. Like for me, like to think about like, oh, like there's going to be like I used to think like I'm going to be in therapy forever. And now I'm like at a point where I'm like, oh, that actually might not necessarily be true. Like I might not necessarily be in therapy every day, like for the rest of my life. I might, and that's not a bad thing, but it's potential that I'm at a place where, you know, I've moved forward or whatever. Maybe not, I don't know. It just depends. But like it's that's what we should be wanting from ourselves, but also we should be wanting that from that our mental health professionals want that for us. And it's interesting you say you get to a point where you're like more friendly and so it's kind of like weird to cut off or whatever. That's what happened with the psychotherapist that I was with, whereas like we'd been together for 7 years and he actually, you know, helped me through so much in that time. And then to have that relationship end was hard for me, but I was also aware like I'm not getting what I need and I'm ready to, in my mind I was like, I'm ready to level up to like actually getting tools and I need something else besides this. And I do think like, I do think understanding the past is important, but I don't think helping us live in that past is important because again, it's about growth and it's about movement forward. And so obviously the past is going to give context, but I don't know many people who actually need to continually live there and just overanalyze it to the point at that point. But everyone's different. Everyone's going to respond differently to different things. For me, I just needed something more that would challenge my beliefs of self and my beliefs of things around me and challenge those things that were like actually holding me back and stuff. And so that came with a new therapist.
Yeah. And I think people, and I'm going to do this in another episode where I talk about different types of therapy and different types of therapeutical approaches that are going to be beneficial for clients because there's so much information in the internet. And so it's really hard to kind of focus. And a lot of the internet information is not put into a language that we understand and we don't understand. So, oh, I can go to this therapist that does EMDR therapy for traumatic experiences. Oh, Monica does solution focused therapy, which is brief therapy where, you know, I'm able to talk to her about things that I'm currently going on. There's all these different types of therapies. But I'm so glad we touched on that. I'm so glad that you've had good experiences and that you kind of knew when to go to the next, you know?
Eventually. It's a process as
well. It's a process. And also it's a hard, understand that as hard as it is for you, it's hard for the therapist to also say, you know what? I think this is not productive anymore. And we come to a point where it's kind of like breaking up, you know?
It is like a breakup. You're kind of like, so it's not you, it's me. And it's like, okay, but it feels like it's me.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, I've had those conversations with clients where I've told them, you know, I feel like I've given you everything that I know, and it's not best for you to continue with someone that has already exhausted what they know and has already exhausted what you need. And so it's important that now you find somebody that can help. Like for me, like I'll give an example. If I have a client, I don't do relationship counseling. So if I had a client who is coming in and now what became first about self-worth and depression, now they're in a relationship, right? Now they know who they are, their self-worth, but now they're having some dynamics with their relationship. And I'm not a relationship therapist. And so I tell them, you know, I think it's time. Like, I feel like we've done the inner work for your self-worth. I feel like you know now what you need out of a relationship. But this is something maybe you two need to go together. And I don't do couples. Yeah. So, you know, maybe you need to go and do somebody else. But I feel like that's go ahead.
I think that's a wonderful thing that you do that. That it's not like, oh, but I need another client, so I'm going to. So I'm going to pretend that I
do couples therapy.
Exactly. It's like, I could try to work this out. You want the best for them. And so I think that's important to have, I think that's just good ethics right there.
Yeah, you have to be ethical. Yeah. If you're practicing out of the scope of what you know, you're not doing it justice.
I think if you're practicing out of the scope that you know, then you need to talk to your therapist about that, because that's I'm pretty sure that's kind of imposter syndrome, maybe a little bit. Like trying to address your ego, and you don't want to say you failed at it, so you're trying to feed your ego. I don't know.
It's a discovery process for us to know that. If we get a call, and I think for me, you know, since I'm starting off, I'm somebody who's recently going to get licensed and I'm starting off, and it's wanting to get, like you said, you don't just want another client. You're like, oh yeah, so yeah, I do borderline personality disorder. And when I know that in the past, I'm like, that's not my cup of tea. You know, I've worked on them. I tried it, but it's just not what I'm good at, you know? Right. I'm not just going to take that client to take a time because it's wasting my time and their money.
Yeah.
And we don't, as millennials, we don't want to waste our time or our money.
No. And that's why I think as I see new therapists kind of popping up everywhere, it's like, I see that mentality that there's, on some level, a more honest look at it. Not only because of time and money, but also our new versions of people, our millennials and all that stuff, we have a little more compassion for those things and understanding, I guess.
And we seek more the human, you know, we're not just wanting to go to this therapist with all these credentials and all this, you know, that's awesome. That's going to entice me to go to therapy with you. But I really want to know, who are you as a human, and how are you going to be compassionate with me? And how are you going to help me walk me through these stuck points that I have currently, or my mental health, my mental illness? How are you going to help me with that? You know, if you can't answer that, then maybe you shouldn't be working with that client.
That's a good point. I like to see my therapist be a real person. Mm-hmm. Not real to the extent where they're like, oh, I got so drunk last night. Not like that. But I understand that there's that need for the professional boundaries. But if I'm comfortable, if I'm going to have someone that I'm comfortable talking to, but I'm also allowing to challenge me and kind of help me move forward and guide me through that, I want to see that they're a real person as well and have that kind of relationship. So that's become kind of important for me, to not have that complete disconnect.
Yeah. My therapist, she's so funny. She'll catch me when I say something and she'll be like, girl, like, no. And she'll be like, we talked about this. Like, you know that that's not what you should have done, or not should, but like, you know that that's not what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I know. And you have like this realization of like, oh, I know, you get me. I get it. And yeah, it's like, or when they say something so powerful, like she told me, stop setting yourself on fire to keep other people warm. And I'm like,
oh,
you got me. You get it.
You got me. Like, you get it. Yeah. And it's like, they, like the ones that get you, they're, it's like they remind you of all those things that you fall into, right? You'll be, they'll be like, so do you see what you did there? And I'd be like, no. Yeah, I see that. I see that. I see what I did. I think like, I'll sometimes be like, I'm too self-aware for my own good. Like, I'm too, but it's like, is there too much self-awareness, or is it like, you know, I'm just being trained really well to call my crap out? But I think it's good to call yourself out and have people who are doing that in a professional way.
Yeah. And are kind of your accountability partners, you know, but, okay. So kind of to wrap everything up, I wanted to ask you two more questions. One of them is, what would you tell somebody who has been recently diagnosed with bipolar?
I would say, you know, go. I think number one, there are great groups out there, like associated with different organizations out there that exist that are great support, right? So you can understand. I was lucky with my parents that they were really like, and I know not everyone's, you know, family members or people in their life are that open to these things, or that people have that option. But my parents went to, like, you know, informational meetings and support group meetings for them. And it's important for us to do that as well. I think number one, the first thing to know is like, it's not the end of the world. It really isn't. Because a diagnosis is not this diagnosis is not a death sentence or a life sentence even. It's an answer to help you live in a more healthy way, if you're taking the steps to take care of yourself. So there's a lot that we go through pre-diagnosis that is really screwy. And so this is not like a bad thing. Like, I mean, bipolar disorder is not a great thing, but the diagnosis is not a bad thing. It's actually a way for you to be taking care of yourself in a more beneficial way that's going to promote you better in life. And so it's important to understand that and remember, like, that is, it's not like the end of the world. And it's actually like the way we get through the rest of our world.
And the way you could advocate for yourself, because now that you know, and then you can do research and you're more informed and you're able to advocate for yourself. Because I don't know how many people, they're just like, well, I just don't know how do I explain this to an employer? How do I explain this to my family? How do I explain this to when I start dating somebody? And how do I advocate for myself? And how do I explain this into a way that they can understand, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things where we want all those answers right away.
Yeah.
Right. And so we can, and I think it's like with anything, like even like if we talk about self-care, right? Like, it's about taking what you learn from all these other people. Like, I can get so many tips about self-care from other people, but then it's applying it to my life. So it's the same thing with all these things. That's why the support group meetings are great. And finding, you know, forums online, now that we have like social media, Twitter is like, there's a huge community of people that are mental health oriented, and Instagram, and all these ways that we can actually find community with people all around the world that, you know, have experienced things similar to what we're experiencing and have been through those things. And so find those people, you know. You don't have to be like, you know, fully blasting out yourself. You can do it anonymously, whatever you're comfortable with. But it's about finding that information. And like you said, it all starts with awareness. We can't do anything about anything until we bring it into our awareness, and then we choose to take action with it. And so there are answers out there, and there are answers for you to create your own answers. And that's important to remember, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. So the last question is, what is one thing that you wish people would just talk about more that maybe isn't talked about? This could be related to mental health or just a general topic that you're passionate about.
Honestly, like, I mean, I think for me, what's been so driven, like, especially like in the last year and a half, 2 years, is the, is the talk about mental health. And I think we're like, I think there's always this confusion between mental health and mental illness, but we use the words mental health in place of mental illness. And so when the words mental health come up, we jump to the conditions and we jump to the illnesses. But that's not what mental health is. I mean, it's part of it, mental health, but mental health is the way we think, feel, and behave. And again, like I said earlier, that's every single human being. So we need to be talking about the way we think, feel, and behave. We need that emotional awareness. We need to start normalizing that. And again, like, I think that's what actually builds bridges. Like, I look at, you know, celebrities, and you look at how the people they're reaching, right? When they're talking about whatever, like anxiety or depression or any of those things, or the people that they're reaching are not necessarily people who would sit and listen to these things, but they're a connecting piece because of their artwork or their music or their acting or whatever. They're a connecting piece. And to me, what is a connecting piece for all of us is the base of mental health, which is the way we think, feel, and behave. So if we bring people in on that level about the feeling, behaving, and the thinking, and we address those things, then they can better understand the illnesses later. And it's not just like introducing the illnesses as a form of like the illnesses right now are like a form of identification of something going wrong, but we're not really doing anything about prevention. And prevention can actually start with being aware of the base of mental health, because not everything is a chemical imbalance. A lot of it is actually things of, we didn't deal with things early on in life. And we didn't know how to deal with certain emotions or whatever. And so by opening up those conversations, I think we need to gain that emotional awareness and be focused on the actual base of mental health.
Yep. Preach, preach. Yes, I love that. So where can people find you? Where can we find your podcast? Do you have a website? Give us all those details.
Yes, I do have a website where it's like connects to all the podcast information as well, but it is thesheckcheck.com. The Sheck Check is on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, like all those, but basically anywhere that you listen to your favorite podcast, you can hear it, but it's all connected on the website. And you can also check me out on Twitter and Instagram under The Sheck Check.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you Yeah, you're like, well, is that right?
I'm gonna do like the signal, even though nobody can hear. Nobody can hear the air painting I've made.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for that. Honestly, I feel like you really, really brought so much awareness to not only bipolar disorder, but just, I think people can listen to this episode and really, you know, they can pick and choose what resonates with them. And I hope this just brings more self-awareness that we do need to talk about this more, and not so much maybe specific mental illness, just a mental health disorder or anything like that, but more about who we are as people and how we, what affects us, and what, you know, why did this affect me? Why am I acting this way? Why did I think that? What?
Yeah.
Because there's something deeper. There's a deeper meaning, you know?
Yeah. There is a deeper meaning. And like, I mean, just like anything, I think we get affected daily. And so if we look at our whole lives, we need to understand like how those things might have affected us, but more importantly, like how we're affected right now and what we could be doing to advance ourselves, I guess. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a condition. We don't need to necessarily be in a box of a diagnosis in order to get help or to talk about these things. So thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks for listening to Cafe with Monica. This was made for you. So be sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes, where I write tips and additional resources for this episode in a location convenient for you. And if you loved this episode and found value and can't wait to hear more, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. It would mean the world to me. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode. So see you guys next time.